It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As the year comes to a close, we're looking back on 2014 and airing some of the Essential Pittsburgh stories that were most popular on our website, WESA.FM. The first segment you'll hear is about the region's nonsensical roads. Pittsburgh has some pretty unique topography as far as cities go. It's basically a peninsula with mountains. With the city's bridges and its triangular shape, there were many questions to be asked about why the roads aren't more efficient. Traffic and road layouts are the focus of the popular blog, Nonsensical Roads of Pittsburgh, run by Phil Anderson. While he's not a civil engineering expert, Phil says he's a resident Pittsburgher who has driven in many different cities, states, and countries. We first asked him why he created his blog and the challenges of driving in the Steel City.
You know, I moved here about 7 years ago, and as you mentioned, I've driven all over the world, 40 of the states of the United States, UK, France, Portugal. And I just realized I was really, really confused by these roads here. And they were kind of unlike anything I'd seen. And I found myself so frustrated, I just wanted to talk about it and kind of vent. You know, I didn't think anyone would actually read it, but just, you know, vent about the roads.
Sounds like, pardon me for laughing, but when you say, yeah, I needed to talk about, like you needed therapy to deal with the trauma of driving on these roads for the first time, which many, many people experience. Nate McClouth, a former pirate, he was traded away from the team. Then when he came back to Pittsburgh, said, boy, I miss these crazy roads. Brendan Morrow, another Pittsburgh prominent athlete, a hockey player, said that, you know, he would just drive in the bus lanes because he got so frustrated trying to get through. So you're not the only one. Why are Pittsburgh streets laid out the way they are? After you decided you needed to vent, you looked into this question. What about the layout, and how does this play into the way that we drive in Pittsburgh?
Sure. So I'm still trying to find the answer to that question. I don't claim to be an expert, but yeah, every time I find a weird situation that's kind of like, what's going on here? I try to look back and see why that was, and it's really a combination of reasons as far as I can tell. So, for example, you know, the roads used to be a real mess in East Liberty because people trying to gentrify it in the 1950s made this complicated circle, and there were roads going under housing projects, and and I think part of it's the topography as well, although I don't completely give that as an excuse because San Francisco has a worse one, but their roads are still okay.
San Francisco has a worse topography, but it's better than Pittsburgh.
Yep, absolutely. So out of all the states I've been to, the only one that's worse than Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania is Louisiana. So, you know, you can consider all the challenges of the mountainous cities out west, of some of the older cities in the east, and I by far find the most confusing situations here in western Pennsylvania.
You have made a list of things on your blog, Phil, that typically cause traffic in Pittsburgh. What are they? I mean, and it probably isn't enough time in this entire hour to go through all of them, but I've looked at this list you've posted, and you know, sharp curves, lanes ending, you know, all that kind of thing. So I'll let you kind of take it from there, because there's a lot of other stuff on this list.
Sure. And what you described is all just happening in one confluence at the Fort Pitt Bridge. And so I often wonder if you guys even pay people for a traffic report, because I think Larkin says the same thing every single day. You know, slow from Green Tree to Fort Pitt Tunnel, from 28 from Hines to the Millvale exit. It's the exact same thing every single day here. And it's really just a combination of traffic patterns that are not optimal. So you're going through a tunnel and making a sharp turn and having a stop sign at a merge area. You know, there's really this huge number of things, you know, not to mention the hills and everything else that really make it difficult. And so you just have these consistent traffic problems every single day.
That was Phil Anderson, creator of the popular blog, The Nonsensical Roads of Pittsburgh. After Phil offered his take on Pittsburgh's roads as a driver, we heard from two transportation experts, Patrick Hassett, assistant director of the Pittsburgh Public Works Department overseeing the Bureau of Transportation, and Dan Cessna, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation's local district executive. Hassett said that a big part of why Pittsburgh's roads present so many challenges is that many of them were laid out before cars were invented.
There was a different world when many of the streets were laid out, and history has perceived that these streets stay as they were. There was a dense development. We walked a lot. We had horses instead of vehicles. A lot of the streets are designed today were not designed for the motor vehicle or the uses we have them today. So history has played a big role in that.
And Dan, why are some of the roads in the city limits? There's some confusion about who controls, who runs the roads or the system that oversees the roads. Why are some roads in the city limits run by PennDOT and some by the city?
It's a good question. It does cause a lot of confusion. There's not a huge rhyme or reason to it. From a standpoint, certainly PennDOT controls all the interstate highway system. But beyond that, the arterials through the city, some are owned by PennDOT, some are owned by the city, some are owned by the county. And if you trace back, a lot of it is who built the road, or who might have been involved, and then through the years, laws actually changed some of those designations. The county built a lot of roads as they were developing the region. Some of those roads were turned back to the state in the 1960s. So there's really no set method as to who owns which highway.
What are the traffic and infrastructure issues that your office hears about the most? I'll start with you on this one, Dan.
It ranges. Certainly, we get comments and complaints that range from as simple as, could you add a stop sign here? Could you change this traffic light? The timing of the signals is a big one. To the maintenance issues, you know, potholes, this is certainly the time of year when that's going to increase. It runs the gamut.
And how do you – when problems come up for you, Patrick, how do you address them? What do you do? Like, or let me go back to you, Dan, first of all. When someone says, hey, we need a stop sign here, I mean, are you able to just go right ahead and do that, or is there a whole
– There's a process.
I'm sure.
If it's for a stop sign, the municipality has to request it. Just because a person that lives there would want a stop sign, that's not something that we would do. And then there has to be a warrant analysis done to determine if it's warranted to be placed, because the last thing you want to do is add stop signs where they're not needed. Just creates another potential hazard for motorists.
Patrick, what are some of the problems that you hear about most?
Well, the most prominent problems are either parking or intersections. And the reason parkings are an issue is everybody thinks they have a God-given right to park on the street in front of their building or in front of their business. In a certain extent, they do have a right, but other people have an equal right. So we spend a lot of time managing that parking on the street. Intersections are a big concern because that's where everybody congregates. That's where the pedestrians are. That's where the buses are. That's where the cars are. That's where the loading zones are. So there's often a lot of complaints regarding who has the rights to access or navigate through that intersection. So it's intersections and parking occupy a lot of our time.
Let me get to some of the questions that were raised during our previous segment with Phil Anderson. PennDOT was there are a lot of PennDOT related questions. Dan Cessna, someone asked about why is $500 million being spent to build a Southern Beltway?
Well, actually, that is Pennsylvania Turnpike project, not a PennDOT project, but it is a requirement of a law that was passed in the 1980s that requires the Turnpike to build those highway expansion projects.
And then another question that came up, why when you're going north on 79, there's no sign for Pittsburgh? You may have heard that.
Yeah, I did hear the question. I'm going to look into that. Certainly on an interstate, you use interstate-to-interstate connections first. And if you're coming north on 79, your first choice would be to take I-376 into the city.
Let's go to some Twitter comments. Jan says her biggest gripe, by the time you see a sign, you've already driven past the exit. CA on Twitter says five-way intersections, lanes that spontaneously turn into turn-only lanes. That's probably happened to some folks. You're driving along and all of a sudden you can't go straight. Park cars in bike lanes and on narrow streets is another complaint. Sound familiar, Patrick?
Very familiar. And I've always contended that our streets are probably our most complicated real estate because of what you just said. Everybody's on the streets doing something different, and somehow we got to accommodate them all safely. In regards to five-legged intersections, they're a reality here in Pittsburgh, but there is some improvements we can probably make in terms of the clarity as to where and how you navigate through the intersection. And we are looking into that. And as complaints come in through 311, we do take a look at these intersections to see if there are improvements we can make to the markings, to the signage.
And Jeremy also asks via email at ESSPGH. He says, often the only sign marking which lane allows for turns and which lane goes straight is placed behind the intersection. Any idea why that is? Are you familiar with that, and do you know why that is?
That's historical. Current standards have us put the lane designations before the intersection and on the pavement.
Should that be changed, do you think?
Right. We should be going out and correcting that.
Okay. So for Jeremy.
So what intersection was he?
He wasn't referring to a specific one. He was just saying in general, he sometimes sees that there's a sign marking which lane allows for turns and which lane goes straight. It's placed behind the intersection. So apparently there's more than one maybe?
There probably are.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one that we've improved. If you look at Hazelwood Avenue and Beechwood Boulevard, that has the proper lane delineations that I was talking about.
412-246-2002, if you would like to join our conversation as we address some of the traffic problems that exist in the area with Patrick Hassett of he's the assistant director of the Pittsburgh Public Works Department, overseeing the Bureau of Transportation, and PennDOT local district executive Dan Cessna. Let's go to John in McMurray. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
You know, the reason I'm calling, I think I have something that sums up this conversation very well. I'm a retired Pittsburgh public school teacher. I taught gifted students. And one day I overheard a comment by one of my gifted students talk to another student. He said, Pittsburgh streets are so non-Euclidean. Shortcuts take longer than the regular way.
That may well sum it. You have two guys in here smiling, so I guess there's a definitely an understanding.
It came from one of my gifted students, and I always remember that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to go back to the signs behind the intersection. Jeremy has overheard your question, Patrick, about what is the specific area where that's happening, and you acknowledge that there's more than one, but Jeremy was referring to the intersection at North Highland and East Liberty Boulevard, which was just updated and includes those same terrible traffic jam causing lane markings and signs. And again, he's pointing out that the problem is that the sign is placed behind the intersection. So are you familiar with what he's talking about there?
Yeah, I'll have to go out and take a look and see what he's talking about.
How about that?
An immediate with the intersection.
Immediate response to a problem pointed out by Jeremy via email. Thank you, Jeremy. We appreciate that. Let's go to Edward in Murraysville with a question. Edward, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. One of the things that I've observed over the years in Pittsburgh is it seems to be that the Pittsburgh drivers have a proclivity to crash through intersections on a red light. When the light turns yellow and they're 50 feet from the intersection, they step on the accelerator. And that's very dangerous. If you're a pedestrian particularly, you have to be very, very careful about crossing the streets, particularly during the high-intensity hours of lunchtime. And there doesn't seem to be any activity taken to try to curb this practice.
Well, it's. I think we've all seen that in Pittsburgh. I don't think it's unique to Pittsburgh. I know that there's a discussion about having red light cameras come in. Patrick or Dan, how would you address Edward's concern?
Well, that comes down to an enforcement issue first and foremost. Within communities, whoever the jurisdiction is, whether they monitor the intersections and cite people for that. But again, to your point about red light cameras, they are in use in Philadelphia on certain corridors, and that's expanding. The ability to do that in the city of Pittsburgh exists if the city they're allowed to do it by state law now if they would choose to implement that on a number of intersections. And it's to improve safety, first and foremost. People think it's revenue generating, but it isn't. It's to enhance safety of the intersections.
A Twitter comment from – or a question on Twitter from Morgan who asks, is there a reason why Schenley Park Oval isn't a travel circle? It's hard to turn left going east there. Patrick?
I'm not sure what he's referring to in Schenley Park Oval. We have the oval up in the park. But if he's referring to the intersection outside of the visitor center.
I believe that's the area he's talking
about. We do have preliminary plans to convert that into a circle. And it was a matter now of funding and accommodating some of the parking impacts in the design.
What are some of the biggest traffic problems and infrastructure issues your office is addressing at the moment?
Well, I mean, a number of areas that are currently being worked on. 28 was considered one of the worst bottlenecks in western Pennsylvania and maybe the state. That's an investment of over $150 million in design and construction costs over the last 10 years. And the 5188 intersection is under construction right now to make a major enhancement there. At the same time, renovating the the poor condition bridge structures. And that's the biggest challenge that we have in this region is the condition of the existing infrastructure.
What about for you, Patrick?
Well, I share the bridge statement with our district, but also what we have going on behind the scenes is we're updating our computer software and our communications equipment so as to be able to allow our signals to communicate both with us and with each other out there. We have two major federal projects going on that will update all of our signal equipment out in the field as well as the communications and computer software to manage them better.
It's been noted that streets which aren't drivable show up on GPS navigation and maps. For example, some local streets turn into city steps and GPS devices recognize them as drivable streets. This brings up the question of why city steps and other drivable areas are labeled as streets at all.
Well, there's two reasons for that. Number one is just a problem with the GPS managers and not understanding the topography or the street network in Pittsburgh. But also understand, given the history of Pittsburgh, we do have some steps that serve as addresses to houses. And to be an address to a house, it needs to be labeled as a street.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Jeff from Fox Chapel. We'll take a couple more calls here. Jeff, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I'm wondering, who's Sunny High North? When you go past Camp Horn Road, it bears off and then it merges with 79. You bear off to the right on 79 to go north. Why can't you go south? Why isn't there an interchange so that you could go south on 279 or on 79 and vice versa? If you're going north on 79, come back and make a right and go south on Parkway North towards Pittsburgh.
Sounds like a question for Dan Cessna.
Yeah, again, when the interstates were laid out and established, some of the connections weren't made at some of the interchanges. We get that same question. It comes into my office about once or twice a year. It just comes down to there's no simple solution in that regard. It would cost many hundreds of millions of dollars to add those connections that he's referring to. And the analysis shows that most of the way the traffic travels, those connections wouldn't be used as much as the primary ones. And again, at the Parkway West interchange 376 with 79 in 2006 and 7, we did add a couple of the missing connections at that location. So it's not to say it will never be done, but it's certainly not one of the region's highest priorities.
I'd just like to say on Route 28, you guys have done a great job. Kudos to the engineers, the construction firms, everyone, to keep that traffic flowing in such an area. I was real amazed as I drive the road. So good job, guys.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We do receive a lot of compliments on that project. It's coming along well.
Let's take one last call from Stephen in Lawrenceville. Stephen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me. I just have a comment and another comment. I don't envy these guys. It's a hard job, I'm sure, with the infrastructure and the weather. But then I just wanted to say that inbound 28, where it connects to 65, there is no sign for 65 until you're on the ramp. And I think there should be an overhead green sign saying this is how you get to 65.
We'll take a look at that.
Last question for you guys very quickly because we are over time here. But one important concern that I think people have is that as Pittsburgh's population tends to grow again, how much more congestion can our roads handle? Do you have plans to address steady population growth?
There's a lot of challenges with that. I think what we really need to emphasize in the region is good access to public transit, try to promote the use of transit, try to promote development that ties into transit, because there's simply not the resources or means to chase population growth, depending how far it sprawls and where all it happens.
Likewise, we're looking at providing more live and work opportunities, increasing the cycling infrastructure in the city, and better accommodating the pedestrians out there.
I want to thank both of our guests, Patrick Hassett, Assistant Director of the Pittsburgh Public Works Department, and also Dan Cessna, Local District Executive with PennDOT. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today.
Our pleasure.
Coming up, we'll talk about a rare presence of seagulls in Pittsburgh and what the polar vortex had to do with it. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.